The arrival of De La Chiaia in Bolivia marked the beginning of a new and ruthless phase in the run-up to the coup. De La Chiaia was now 44, his enthusiasm for the cause undimmed by his many setbacks. He saw the Bolivian crisis as an essential part of a right-wing movement which he hoped would roll back communism and left-wing governments everywhere in South America. "I decided that I had to contribute to the creation of an international revolutionary movement," he told a Spanish magazine interviewer in early 1983. "I was thinking then, as I think now, that it is not possible to carry forward revolutionary action in one country without a global vision of political events and a common strategy. So when the proposal of a national revolution presented itself in Bolivia, we were there, collaborating with our Bolivian comrades. We were neither torturers nor drug terrorists, but political militants." Despite this high-sounding language, De La Chiaia was there to do an essentially practical job. Arce Gomez placed him in Department 2 to work alongside Klaus Barbie. Barbie was 67, hardened and cynical. For him, the coup would be primarily an act of self-preservation, though he could argue the case against communism with the best of them. But he admired De La Chiaia's inflexible approach. It struck a deep chord in his old SS heart. It was not the first time the two had met. Alvaro de Castro, Barbie's shadow and bodyguard, recalled a trip De La Chiaia made to Bolivia in 1978. "He came to Bolivia from Argentina with Pagliai," he said. "I met them with some others to discuss the possibility of publishing a magazine in La Paz. The two Italians held long discussions with Barbie and de Castro. The bond then struck between them was to last. They were good people," said de Castro disingenuously. "We liked them," unquote. What Barbie was able to offer De La Chiaia when he arrived in November of 79 was unrivaled local knowledge. He could explain the intricacies of Bolivian politics, the strengths and weaknesses of the security apparatus, and the importance of the drug mafia. De La Chiaia was impressed to find that the kind of paramilitary squad he had always used himself was already in existence organized by Barbie. He set about organizing his own to supplement it. So, summing up, reviewing what we've looked at very briefly, we took a look at Stefano De La Chiaia as a DINA agent, an agent for the Chilean secret police. And he then went to work for the Argentine secret services. He did not then jump directly to Bolivia. That was my mistake. He goes to work for the Argentine secret services. And while working for the Argentines, he makes the jump to the Fiancés of Death, the paramilitary death squads working with Klaus Barbie in the overthrow of the Bolivian government.
And looking deeper into the overthrow of the Bolivian government, we're going to go to Covert Action Information Bulletin, the issue published winter of 1986.
Now, what we're going to be looking at here in CAIB is, again, a recoalescing of the very same P2 Vatican, Nazi, fascist, and U.S. intelligence cooperative situation that we've been looking at since the rat line. And we're going to look at that recoalescing in 1980 to overthrow the Bolivian government.
Okay, reading from Covert Action Information Bulletin, the 1980 Bolivian coup. The 1980 putsch was not just one of many coup d'etat by power-hungry generals in Bolivia. It was 2 years in the planning and was supposed to complete a stable axis in South America, from Chile through Argentina, Uruguay, and Paraguay to Bolivia. The coups in Chile in 1973 and Argentina in 1976 were examples. That is how it is stated in a plan with the codename Amapole, poppy flower, which had been already devised in 1978 at the initiative of the Bolivian intelligence officer Klaus Altman, i.e., Klaus Barbie. The political, economic, and military aspects of the planned putsch were set forth in 145 pages. Klaus Barbie himself prepared the military part. The Bolivian banker, Dr. Enrique Garcia, had the responsibility of planning the economic direction of the new order after the putsch. U.S. institutions paid him for his work. Under the heading, quote, logical framework, Garcia designed an economic order for Bolivia using Chile as an example. If one believes the designer of the plan, there were very definite foreign promises of investments, under the stipulation that the economy in no way be jeopardized by leftist parties or, quote, subversive groups for at least 10 years. U.S. concerns accordingly promised an oil refinery, a truck assembly plant, and a Ford factory. Argentina wanted to secure the exploitation of the ore deposits in Mutun with long-term credits. In Bolivia, in 1978, another transition phase from military dictatorship to democracy began. Elections were held and annulled by the military. Barbie assumed that within the next 2 years it would come to the establishment of a powerless civilian government. He speculated that in the power vacuum of the transition period, armed leftist extremist groups would again develop. A leftist guerrilla was supposed to be the alibi for an Argentinian solution, the physical liquidation of the leftists in Bolivia. Early in 1978, Klaus Barbie flew to West Germany, among other reasons, to recruit soldiers. He started with a buildup of his terror commandos. Barbie also took up contact with the Argentinian intelligence organization, which, at the time, along with the CIA, ensured the maintenance of the old dictatorships in various Latin American countries. The contact man to the Argentinians was the Italian Dr. Emilio Carbone, steady guest at Barbie's table in the Café La Paz. Carbone was a member of a group supporting the Italian neo-fascist terrorist Stefano Della Chiai. The group had come to Chile in 1976 and had taken on special assignments for the intelligence organization DINA. The address of the group, Calle de la Asunción, 1173, Santiago. On the recommendation of an old SS comrade in Chile, Walter Rauf, the inventor of the portable gas chamber wagon and DINA employee, Barbie had brought the Italian Carbone to Bolivia at the end of 1976. It should just be inserted and mentioned, we talked about the fact that Walter Rauf, along with Klaus Barbie, was one of the people that used Licio Gelli's rat line. These folks stay in touch. Carbone was more of a theoretician than a practitioner of political assassinations. In La Paz, he became secretary of the Black International, a fascist group. Carbone was more of a theory. The other Italians from Della Chiai's group moved on in November 1977 to Argentina, and there, under Colonel Molinari, the Secretary of State Security, were used in the fight against subversion. Early in 1978, Barbie assigned his colleague Carbone to take up contact with the leader of the Italian execution commandos, Stefano Della Chiai, and to recruit him for a mission in Bolivia. The Argentinian intelligence organization sent a special commando group to La Paz. Among the first Argentinian intelligence officers who worked on the plans for the overthrow in Bolivia was Lieutenant Alfred Mario Mingoya. The Argentinian had the order to contact Altman, alias Barbie. Mingoya says, quote, "I had not heard much about Altman." That's Barbie's alias. "However, before our departure, we received a dossier on him. There it stated that he was of great use to Argentina because he played an important role in all of Latin America in the fight against communism. From the dossier, it was also clear that Altman worked for the Americans. They listed his contact people as well as his various trips to the U.S. Argentinian intelligence people and German soldiers who came to La Paz went the same route. They first reported to Dr. Alfredo Candia, the Bolivian leader of the World Anti-Communist League, WACL, an organization close to the CIA with headquarters in Taiwan. And of course, those of you who are familiar with our Radio Free America broadcast know that we did a huge Radio Free America on WACL, two of them.
And we'll be coming back to WACL in connection with the shooting of the Pope and this whole axis later.
Candia then brought them to Schneider's clock shop. The owner of German descent likes to show his comrades a picture in which Hitler's party secretary, Martin Bormann, who had allegedly vanished in 1945, is to be seen in a monk's habit in La Paz. Schneider checked out the new recruits and ordered them to meet with Barbie the next day at the driving school Indianapolis on the Avenida Mariscal, Santa Cruz. Barbie's secretary, Alvaro de Castro, then provided them with a 2-year visa, Interpol identification, and firearm licenses from the Ministry of the Interior. The Argentinian agents moved into the offices of the military intelligence agency G2, Department 7, for, quote, psychological warfare. In addition, some of the Germans, such as Joachim Fiebelkorn, became agents for the Bolivian intelligence organization. Barbie wanted to launch a national socialist government from the planned coup. The leading rightists of the Bolivian military became members of the secret lodge Tula, T-H-U-L-E. During lodge meetings, Barbie lectured underneath swastikas and by candlelight on national socialist principles. Barbie agreed with the terrorist leader Stefano Della Chiai that armed rightist extremist groups from the whole world should be brought together. Bolivia was to become the core of a national socialist revolution in all of South America. The Black International outfitted an ideological and paramilitary training camp for foreign comrades in buildings belonging to the Summer Institute of Linguistics, a CIA-controlled institution. Barbie's closest colleagues organized a national socialist fighters group, the Bolivia Joven, Young Bolivia, modeled after the example of the SA. The co-founders were Barbie's confidant, Emilio Carbone, and Barbie's secretary, Alvaro de Castro. The official leader of the Young Bolivians was the 30-year-old Armando Layton, intelligence agent and disciple of National Socialism. Layton proudly shows his membership ID with Reich's eagle and swastika. He would like to meet the German neo-Nazi Michael Kunin. He says that he admires the Germans, but qualifies this, quote, "Some of the Germans who came to us at that time, such as Joachim Fiebelkorn, for example, were not good National Socialists. In my eyes, they were simply mercenaries who knew nothing about National Socialist morale and discipline. They only wanted part of the cocaine money." In the spring of 1980, Klaus Barbie and his accomplices made the last preparations for the putsch. In the meantime, in La Paz, a civilian cabinet had been sworn in and tempered, and the tempered middle-left coalition under Siles won new elections. That's Hernán Siles Suazo. The left guerrillas, on whom Barbie had counted, did not exist. Then, the Bolivia Joven, with the support of Barbie's foreign terrorist groups, stepped into action. Bombs detonated throughout the entire country. In May 1980, another commando of the Argentinian intelligence organization, SIE, came to La Paz. The group, working under orders from Lieutenant Colonel Julio César Duran, was responsible for carrying out the putsch and for, quote, professionalizing the Bolivian security apparatus. Delegated to the group were both Italian terrorists, Stefano Della Chiaia and Pierluigi Pagliai, who was wanted, among other reasons, for murdering a functionary of the communist youth in Italy. The foreign agent team was later completed with two Israeli specialists. Barbie had nothing against Israelis when they were, quote, military security experts. The Bolivian military putsch of July 17, 1980, was almost exclusively directed and organized by foreigners. The only important Bolivian players were General Luis García Mesa and Colonel Luis Arce Gómez, who had been earmarked as junta leaders. They were considered the toughest in the right extremist officers' clique. Nevertheless, Barbie encountered opposition from the military when he, together with the Argentinians, prepared an execution list. 185 politicians, union members, and intellectuals were supposed to be liquidated during the putsch. High-ranking officers who learned of the plan discovered friends and relatives among the, quote, subversives who were supposed to be, quote, liquidated. Barbie and his accomplices could not put through the Argentinian solution. A few days before the scheduled date of the putsch, Joachim Fiebelkorn, the commander of the paramilitary troop in Santa Cruz, received the order from Barbie's secretary, Alvaro de Castro, to come to La Paz with his armed battalion. Fiebelkorn called Barbie, who then confirmed the order. Barbie's secretary, Castro, received the German-Bolivian commando at La Paz airport and channeled two suitcases filled with weapons through customs. For 2 days, Fiebelkorn inspected the capital's strategically important points before returning once again to Santa Cruz with his comrades. Barbie and the commanding general of Santa Cruz, Echeverria, argued about the competency of Fiebelkorn's action unit, the Fiancés of Death. The general insisted on using the Fiancés in the putsch of Santa Cruz. Only one of the paramilitary men from Santa Cruz, the infamous killer Mosca Monroy, arrived punctually in La Paz. There, by mistake, Monroy killed, among others, the guard of a secret U.S. transmitter. The putsch was more precisely planned and executed than any other putsch in Bolivia's history. The paramilitary stormed the Union Hall and the party headquarters. Almost all potential leaders of the resistance were arrested within hours. The brutality of the terrorist groups and the military frightened off the workers and students. Only the Indians from the tin mines desperately resisted for another few days. As with any overthrow, most of the victims were among them. The coup of July 17, 1980, had many victors. The fascists celebrated the National Socialist takeover of power with swastika flags and the greeting, Heil Hitler. Those supporting a free market for Latin America believed that socialism had been averted. Washington, despite reservations about such officers as Garcia and Arce, could hope for a stable government sympathetic to the U.S. The Argentinian military dictators had extended their sphere of influence.
Continuing with Covert Action's account, this from number 25, winter of 1986. Next, they're going to describe the Unification Church's role in this fascist coup in Bolivia. The first official well-wisher who visited the newly coronated President Garcia was a surprise, at least for outsiders. He was the acting leader of the Moonies, Colonel Bo Hi Pak. The representative of the sect's founder Moon announced after his return to the U.S., quote, "I have erected a throne for Father Moon in the world's highest city," unquote. According to the legally recognized assessment of four clerics from Hessen, a West German state, the Moon sect is, quote, "a criminal union that espouses human psychological terror and proclaims a fascist system," unquote. The Moon sect possesses, among other things, munitions factories in South Korea and television channels in South America. They regard their founder, Moon, as Holy Father, President Reagan as the world's political savior, unquote. A representative of the Moon sect had come to Bolivia at the end of the 1960s. On the 13th floor of the Jasmine building in La Paz, an Asian named Harumiko Iwasawa sat with some Americans and no one seemed to know what they were actually doing there. It was not until 1983 that the Bolivian Minister of the Interior and Bolivian journalists determined that the gentleman from the Moon sect, as well as others, had invested about $4 million into the preparation of the coup. Membership lists of the political Moon organization Causa were found. At the top of the lists were the names of almost all the leading military personnel who, at the same time, had been honoring the swastika in Barbie's Lodge. Even junta leader Garcia had been converted to the Moonies for a time. Barbie was skeptical of the sect's activities, but had to keep the Moon people as allies. On May 31, 1981, 9 months after the cocaine general's coup, almost the entire leadership of the Moon sect and their Latin American political organization, Causa, flew to La Paz. Before 200 invited guests in the Sheraton Hotel's Hall of Freedom, unquote, Moon's representative Colonel Pak and the Bolivian junta leader Garcia began by praying for U.S. President Reagan, who had been wounded in an assassination attempt. Pak then explained, quote, "God had chosen the Bolivian people in the heart of South America as the ones to conquer communism," unquote. The Moon organization Causa started their political missionary work throughout the entire country. 50,000 of the sect's books, according to a Bolivian intelligence agency report, were brought to La Paz by an American Air Force plane. Along with ideological enlightenment, unquote, the education of an anti-communist people's army for an armed church, unquote, began. Around 7,000 Bolivians took part in the pre-military training. The Israeli embassy supported the campaign and delivered, among other things, instructional films about the fight against the Palestinian resistance. The leader of the Moon group in Bolivia was Thomas Tom Ward. Barbie and the pale American Ward, who always seemed to be absorbed in prayer, were often seen together. Tom Ward was also the man who delivered a payment from the CIA in early 1981 to the Argentine intelligence lieutenant Alfredo Mingoya. $1,500 a month salary for Mingoya was paid in the Causa office belonging to William Selig, Ward's representative. Selig put less stock in pious attitudes than his boss. He was an electronic specialist with experience in Vietnam and advised the Bolivian intelligence organization on technical matters. The third man in the CIA cadre of the Moonies was Paul Perry, who had already tried to organize an armed church, unquote, in Brazil. The Argentinian agent Alfredo Mingoya at first knew little about the connection between the Nazi Barbie and the Moonie Ward. 2 days after his recruitment by the CIA, says Mingoya, he met the old German in the courtyard of the Bolivian General Staff. Mingoya came out of Department 7 of the intelligence agency. Barbie came out of Department 3. Barbie greeted his colleague as Mingoya remembers it. "Hello, comrade. What do I hear? Are you working for a new employer?" Mingoya answered with surprise, "For what? For who, then?" Barbie, "Nah, for Mr. Ward, for example." Mingoya feared reproach. "Yes, doesn't the organization allow that?" Barbie laughed. "It's okay. There has to be cooperation," unquote. Mingoya says that it was first clear to him on that day that Barbie had become a top man for the CIA. Because only top people knew the names of the other agency employees. I would interrupt here. Of course, Barbie had worked for U.S. intelligence for a long time, a Galen agent by his own account, so it's not surprising to see him working for CIA here. Barbie's steady CIA contact person was the munitions dealer Fernando Incauste, Incauste. He boasted that he had direct contact with President Reagan, whom he allegedly knew during the latter's California governor days. Another one of Barbie's steady CIA contact people was Jorge Portugal, also a munitions dealer. He was Encauste's close co-worker and Barbie's business friend. The third man from the secret intelligence area with whom Barbie worked was Ludwig Alves Pacheco. The first name, Ludwig, represents his German ancestry, something which Alves Pacheco boasts about. The Bolivian is also proud of his real German passport. He received the passport, he says, for special services rendered to West Germany. With regard to the quality of Barbie's activities as an agent for the American and West German information agencies, even those Bolivian government members who ought to know it best speak about it only hesitantly. The defense minister of the pro-Western government in Bolivia at the time, Manuel Cardenas Mayo, M-A-L-L-O, in an official interview, cautiously answered our questions regarding information about Barbie's work for foreign agencies. Cardenas: "We have no documentation about it. They let those disappear before President Siles took over the government. But that Barbie worked for foreign intelligence agencies, but that Barbie worked for foreign intelligence agencies is believable. Many people knew that, and there are many people who can confirm that," unquote. Was Barbie merely an informant, or did he, working for foreign agencies, influence the political development? Cardenas: "Many people who worked with Barbie are still in service here. You must understand, it is dangerous if they find out that foreigners had so much influence here, that they did not just play an advisory role, but that they actually made decisions." "Do you mean to say that the USA staged the 1980 coup?" Cardenas hesitates and then answers: "Let me say it like this, and then you can quote me. If there isn't a coup happening today, it is only because of one reason, because it is the first time that the Americans are not interested in a coup." So basically what we have here is the Unification Church, a key element of the World Anti-Communist League, very close to U.S. intelligence and obviously working with it, working in cooperation with the West German Agency and Klaus Barbie and Stefano Della Chiai and Pierluigi Pagliai and Joaquin Fiebelkorn from the Bologna bombing to overthrow the Bolivian government in 1980.
And before Dave reads you another little follow-up on the involvement of some of the folks in this particular series of events, let me just mention that broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills.
One detail we forgot to mention, that is, by the way, from Covert Action number 25, winter of 1986. This particular article, by the way, is called Klaus Barbie, A Killer's Career. It's by Kai Hermann, H-E-R-M-A-N-N, who is a German writer who writes for Stern, Spiegel, and Die Zeit. This particular article is based on a series of articles that appeared in Stern. Oh, actually, this is an exact translation of one of the six Stern articles. So, from Covert Action, number 25, winter of 86, Klaus Barbie, A Killer's Career, by Kai Hermann. And as long as we've, now that we've properly annotated that, and again, not to be pedantic, but that's the purpose of this whole thing. Remember now, the Moon, Della Chiai, Barbie connections, and with not only U.S. intelligence, but their participation in the Bolivian coup. And remember, keep in mind all of the Moony connections that we've talked about, both in our Mind Control series and our Wackle series. Apparently, at least according to one account, Reverend Moon and his organization in Uruguay are sheltering Licio Gelli on the lam. Once again, research credit for the following article to Ted Rubenstein, translation to Jonathan Marshall. This is from the Estado de São Paulo of September 27, 1983, the main daily of São Paulo, Brazil. Ortolani denies all accusations. He says they are motivated by a plot against the Vatican. He is now a naturalized Brazilian citizen and thus can't be extradited to Italy. It seems that a cocaine trafficker named Peter Hode was using Ortolani's identity. Perhaps Ortolani lost his passport and Hode found it. In Italy, Ortolani carried on a lively polemic with the administrator of the PSI, Rino Fornica, claiming that some of the money ENI paid to Saudi Arabia for petroleum was laundered into the PSI's coffers. Gelli is said by a human rights group to be living in Uruguay under the protection of Moon and the government of General Gregorio Alvarez. So apparently the Moon P2 connections continue here, and not only are P2 elements and the Moonies cooperating with U.S. and West German intelligence to overthrow the Bolivian government, but apparently Gelli is now sheltering Moon.
Okay, or rather the other way around.
Rather Moon is sheltering Gelli, right.
The Moon is over Gelli. Okay. Now, we've got another section here, of an article from the Boston Globe of November 17th, 1984, that's going to detail a little bit yet another twist in the bizarre relationship between U.S. intelligence and the backers of the Bolivian coup, and also people connected to P2, et cetera, et cetera. The article is headlined, "Ignoring the Right-Wing Link to the narcotics trade. It's written by Jerry Meldon for the Boston Globe, and it was provided to us by Ted Rubenstein. The article starts, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the article starts basically talking about ridiculousness of the conservatives in this country talking about the Russians, the Sandinistas, the Castroites in Cuba being involved in drug traffic, when it's a fairly well-known fact to anybody who bothers to study these things that, in fact, the right wing in Latin America and in Europe is by far the leading source of drug traffic and things of that nature. And talks about some strange involvements on behalf of, and strange statements on behalf of the Drug Enforcement Agency, the USDEA. Goes on to talk in the article about Stefano Della Chiai. Meldon writes, Stefano Della Chiai has also lived in a conservative blind spot. Known by the nickname Il Cacciola, Shorty, Della Chiai is an intriguing right-wing terrorist because he masterminded the August 1980 bombing of the main railway station in Bologna, Italy. The Bologna bombing left 85 dead and 185 maimed. It drove Il Cacciola and his neo-Nazi cohort Joachim Fiebelkorn to Bolivia. There the two joined the Bridegrooms of Death, a paramilitary death squad under the aegis of Gestapo war criminal Klaus Barbie, the Butcher of Lyon, formerly of U.S. intelligence. The gang doubled as a goon squad for the Bolivian military dictators and as enforcers for cocaine billionaire Roberto Suarez. In 1982, democracy returned to Bolivia. Barbie was extradited to France, and the authorities raided Bridegroom headquarters. But Il Cacciola, apparently tipped off, was out, and Fiebelkorn had turned himself in when a warrant for his arrest was issued in Bologna. Fiebelkorn did not surrender to the Italians, who sought him for the train station massacre. He went instead to West German authorities, who indicted him on a narcotics charge. That led the tale to its most bizarre twist. On trial this spring in Hamburg, Fiebelkorn revealed that while a bridegroom in Bolivia, he was a paid agent of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. Until 1981, when the DEA, told of the Bologna blast, farmed him out to West German intelligence. Okay, let me go back over that one more time because this is very important. What Meldon doesn't quite mention, but what we covered in quite a bit of detail in that covert action information bulletin article, is that, in fact, Fiebelkorn was an integral part of the actual coup that overthrew. We talked about Fiebelkorn and his Bridegrooms of Death being brought directly in, under the aegises of the Argentinians, the West German mercenaries recruited by Barbie, Stefano Della Chiai and the others, and Fiebelkorn and his bridegroom mercenaries being brought directly in for the coup itself. So now we have a man who not only is involved with Klaus Barbie, ex of U.S. intelligence, ex Gestapo, Stefano Della Chiai involved with people like Michele Sindona and Licio Gelli, both of them connected to Western intelligence and specifically the CIA, but now we have Joachim Fiebelkorn, the Coca Fascista commando, who also was apparently working for the DEA, at least as that's what he said when he went on trial, working for the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration until at least 1981, at which point he was farmed out to West German intelligence.
Okay, now, Jerry Meldon, the fellow who wrote that particular article, and note that Joachim Fiebelkorn was apparently working for DEA and the whole operation, the Bridegrooms of Death, Della Chiai, and so forth, obviously cooperating with U.S. and West German intelligence. Jerry Meldon was the fellow who wrote the article, The German Brouhaha, about the Merricks arms firm, and specifically how he mentioned how Merricks was used by the BND to funnel arms to Italian terrorists in Italy, and specifically one of the people who was apparently the key Merricks and BND contact was a man named Guido Gianatelli, who was not only a key member of SID and P2, but who had been involved in the Piazza Fontana massacre of the Strategy of Tension with Stefano Della Chiai, CIA, and so forth. Now, remember the Merricks firm, because we're about to come back to it. Returning once again to the Nazi legacy by Linklater, Hirschinson, and I've forgotten the third author's name off the top of my head. Anyway, the Nazi legacy. One of the people that Klaus Barbie worked with in Latin America for a long time was none other than Friedrich Schwend. Friedrich Schwend, as we looked at in our first broadcast, went to work for U.S. intelligence after World War II. Friedrich Schwend was the mastermind behind Operation Bernhard, the proceeds of which used to fund the Alois Hudal rat line involving, among others, Licio Gelli and then Cardinal Montini, later Paul VI. About Klaus Barbie's active cooperation with Friedrich Schwend in Latin America, the authors write as follows in The Nazi Legacy. In those years, too, Schwend made contact with Klaus Barbie in Bolivia. Schwend was later to say that they had first met during the war, but since he added that Klaus Altmann had nothing to do with Klaus Barbie, the Butcher of Lyon, his remarks must be viewed with caution. Whatever the truth, the two men maintained a regular and frequent correspondence, a close friendship, and a highly lucrative partnership throughout their time in South America. The parallels between their careers are striking. Like Barbie, Schwend established a respectable business, in his case, raising chickens. Like Barbie, he set up a company dealing in arms. Like Barbie, he worked secretly for government agencies, I would interject, including our own, and like Barbie, his respectable front represented only a fraction of his activities. As early as 1953, U.S. records show him offering his services as a trained saboteur to an exiled Bolivian group trying to mount a coup against the Paz Estenssoro government, then, a few months later, describing himself as a consultant in anti-communist activities to the Peruvian army. The business objectives of this apparently modest chicken farmer were the enrichment through arms dealing, the sale of state secrets, blackmail and extortion of Friedrich Schwend and his circle of Kameraden, former Nazis like himself and Barbie who had won the confidence of a series of Latin American governments. At the same time, they built up considerable political power in their respective countries by virtue of the information they collected. How much benefit Schwend, Barbie, and the Kameraden actually brought to the governments they advised is best summed up by a Peruvian judge, Santos Chichizola, who was to investigate their activities 20 years after and who took possession of the voluminous Schwend archives. At the end of a lengthy interview, during which he described in some detail the astonishing careers of the two men, he concluded, quote, "As I went through the documents, it became clear to me that Peru did not have a single military secret left. Schwend and his friends had sold them all." The Schwend papers, currently held in a Lima vault and still the object of enormous interest among Nazi historians, open up a fresh area of Barbie's life and document the involvement of the Nazi network in South America in arms dealing and counter-subversion. Only by gaining access to them has it been possible to compile the detailed account that follows of a unique and unscrupulous partnership. The primary business of Schwend and Barbie, arms trafficking, was carried on through two German-based firms, Merex and Gemetex. The two Nazis acted as agents, negotiating purchases not only on behalf of the Bolivian and Peruvian governments, but through their friendship with the Nazi Hans Rudel, sales to Paraguay and Chile, and through Colonel Otto Skorzeny in Spain.
Private files of a group working closely with Dabuisson.
Nip, since that's so short, I'm going to ask you to read that again for posterity, because we didn't get that on tape, because I'm changing a side here due
to
our logistics.
Good enough. Okay, reading again from the Nazi legacy. In El Salvador, the aspiring nationalist politician, Major Roberto Dabuisson, listened enthusiastically to De La Chiaia's account of the men and the expertise he could provide. He invited him to contribute his views on how the Salvadorian army should cope with guerrillas and subversives, and De La Chiaia responded with a paper written in his inimitable leaden style. The document, signed with De La Chiaia's codename Alpha, was included in a June 1980 analysis of the Salvadorian military from the private files of a group working closely with Dabuisson. Skipping on down, speaking also of De La Chiaia, on September 2nd, he traveled to Buenos Aires for the opening of the 4th Congress of the Latin American Anti-Communist League, accompanied by Garcia Meza's personal delegate. Garcia Meza, of course, is the man who is in charge in Bolivia right at this moment, after the coup that Stefano De La Chiaia helped out with. There, De La Chiaia arranged several meetings in the Hotel Plaza between Major Dabuisson of El Salvador and senior Bolivians, at which Dabuisson sought and obtained their help in sending weapons and money to his anti-guerrilla forces. Dabuisson was impressed by the advice he received from De La Chiaia and his comrades. Quote, "They are professionals," said one Salvadorian who went to Buenos Aires with him. "They can teach the Guardia Nacional how to do things." Bear in mind, of course, also that Dabuisson certainly learned his lessons, for one of the things that he managed to learn from these professionals, apparently, was to have somebody put a bullet into Archbishop Oscar Romero, the leading religious figure of El Salvador, a curious parallel to the stuff that we're examining in this particular broadcast.
Now, of course, Dabuisson is a fellow of the far right, so to find De La Chiaia aiding him is not really all of that unusual. What we're going to be looking at now is De La Chiaia aiding some people who, at least ostensibly, are operating on the exact opposite side of the political spectrum. And what the implications of that are, we'll discuss in just a couple of minutes. We're going to be looking at a One Step Beyond. We're going to be listening to. We're not going to be looking at anything. We're going to be listening to a segment of One Step Beyond from November 25th of 1984. And Nip Tuck's going to be reading a couple of articles. One from the American press and one from the Italian.
This first article is from the New York Times for Monday, November 19th, 1984. It's headlined, Cocaine Traffickers Kill 17 in Peru Raid on Anti-Drug Team. This is a UPI Wire story from Lima, Peru. A band of cocaine traffickers burst into a jungle campsite and opened fire with automatic weapons, killing at least 17 people employed by a United States-financed program to destroy coca crops, the police said today. All those killed in the attack, which took place early Saturday, were identified as Peruvian employees of the Coca Reduction Organization. The group is taking part in a $30 million program that the United States is financing to cut the production of coca along the Huallaga River, spelled H-U-A-L-L-A-G-A, Huallaga River, where most of the illegal coca in Peru is grown. Peru produces almost half of the world's coca, the prime ingredient in cocaine. Workers in the program destroy coca and replace it with crops that are less profitable but legal, such as soybeans and corn. President Fernando Balón de Terry said three others working in the program as topographers were also killed, but the police said the total number of the dead was 17. A spokesman for a police anti-drug unit that was trained by the United States said about 50 men with submachine guns entered the site at Monzón, about 200 miles northeast of Lima, and began shooting. In addition to those who were killed, three people were critically wounded and seven others escaped injury by hiding during the attack, the police spokesman said. He was interviewed by telephone from Tingo Maria, about 40 miles from Monzón. He said the attackers fled immediately and the authorities found no trace of them. Mr. Balón de Terry said the victims were, quote, heroes, and the killers were, quote, narco-terrorists. Quote, this was an attempt to discourage the drug eradication program, the president told reporters. The government has said the Maoist guerrilla group Shining Path recently opened a front in the Tingo Maria area and is working with cocaine traffickers who are believed to be Colombians. Dozens of people, including policemen, mayors, and farmers, have been killed during the last year in coca-growing areas in attacks attributed to cocaine traffickers and their guerrilla allies. Okay, a couple of things are very important here. First of all, this attack took place along the Huallaga River. Okay, remember that. This is where the attack took place, close to the Huallaga River. Also, the fact that that they said that the Maoist group Shining Path, Spanish name is Sendero Luminoso, has opened a front in the Tingo Maria area recently and is working with cocaine traffickers. Okay, a couple of interesting things here to look at as we get into some other stuff. Okay, first of all, cocaine traffickers in many other parts of Central and South America right now are known as the Coca Fascista because they're extremely right-wing. In Bolivia, we saw they were intimately linked up with a military government and with a bunch of noted fascists, among them Klaus Barbie and a man named Stefano Della Chia, of whom we will talk more later. Okay, so on one hand, you have these coca fascista, the cocaine fascists, linked up with right-wing death squads in most of Latin America, where we found any true information about them. Now you have the supposedly Maoist group, Shining Path, Sendero Luminoso, that supposedly linked up with the cocaine traffickers in Peru to kill people, trying to scale down the cocaine operations, trying to provide alternatives to people from growing coca. Okay, now, some other interesting things to think about in this case. Recently in Bolivia, okay, a few months back, there was an attempt at, we talked about how when the civilian government came in Bolivia, promptly extradited Klaus Barbie, chased Stefano Della Chia out of the country, made trouble for a bunch of other prominent fascists in Bolivia. We talked that there was a good possibility that President Hernán Siles Suazo in Bolivia would not last out his term because of what things that we've seen in the past. There was a recent coup attempt against him in which he was actually kidnapped by members of a group called Los Leopardos, the Leopards, who are a DEA-trained drug eradication group. Okay, bear that in mind. They were trained by the DEA in Bolivia to eradicate drugs, the Leopardos. And they tried to overthrow the civilian government of Hernán Siles Suazo in Bolivia, another major source of cocaine trafficking. Okay, just bear those things in mind. We'll explain some more as we go along. Okay, this next long article is from Panorama magazine, which is an Italian magazine, I believe. We have this thanks to both Dave Emery and Ted Rubenstein. This is for the 10th of September, 1984, and I believe this is a translation. Okay, so some of the wording is a trifle awkward, but the sense is crystal clear, and the article starts as such. The police of Peru, Colombia, and Bolivia are looking for him. The DEA and FBI are giving him the chase. And dozens of magistrates in Italy have been wanting to arrest him for years. But the Black Primrose, Stefano Della Chia, Nazi, founder of Avanguardia Nazionale, implicated in the fascist attack at the Piazza Fontana, in the attacks on the Italicus train and the Bologna train station, is superb at not being found. The reason for this elusiveness was explained at the end of July by the new head of SISMI, S-I-S-M-I, the Italian Secret Service. Admiral Vincenzo Parisi said, quote, the fascist boss enjoys vast protection, unquote. Who protects him? SISMI suspects he is being, quote, covered by some South American Secret Service. He found noteworthy support from the Chilean, Paraguayan, and Uruguayan services. He was then consistently tied to the coup-happy Bolivian service and with the more destabilizing sectors of the Peruvian services. In South America, Della Chia exported the most provocative methods collected in Italy during the strategy of tension. Della Chia, collaborator and consultant of the magnates of cocaine, at the time of the Garcia Meza dictatorship in Bolivia, he became a kind of super minister of interior in La Paz and directed the traffic in drugs. Infiltrated in the most fantastical and mysterious of revolutionary movements in Latin America, Shining Path. Maoist guerrillas, the men of Sendero Luminoso, guided by, and I'm not sure about the name here because it's kind of fuzzy, but it looks like Abumei Guzman, an ex-professor of philosophy, reject modern industrial and urban culture, whether capitalist or socialist. Ideas well known to those familiar with the beliefs of Avanguardia Nazionale. A Peruvian police report indicates that Della Chia organized one of the most violent actions of Sendero Luminoso, the assault on Lima on 28th of May 1983. In that terrible night, a large formation of guerrillas, accompanied by specialists furnished by the drug mafia, blew up some high-tension wires and plunged the whole city into darkness. Afterward, the government of President Belaunde Terry suspended constitutional guarantees. From there, Peru has been moving tragically toward a permanent state of emergency, to the pleasure of reactionary forces who oppose every reform. To the northeast of Lima, where the government in the agricultural project of Alto Huallaga, same place we were talking about where this attack just took place, where the government in the agricultural project of Alto Huallaga is trying to persuade peasants to give up coca cultivation, the guerrillas and the drug mafia have fused under the guidance of Della Chia. The mayor of Tingo Maria, the Amazon capital, was killed for opposing the Maoists and the traffickers. In the Golden Triangle of coca, in the jungles of Peru, Colombia, and Brazil are cocaine refineries, clandestine airstrips, and military training centers where European mercenaries congregate under Della Chia's guidance. His last action, according to Bolivian police, was the attempted, quote, spring coup in La Paz. The president, Siles Suazo, a tenacious Democrat opposed to the drug traffic, was taken prisoner during a putsch organized by Alfredo Arce Carpio and Gonzalo Torrico, head of the Democratic Nationalist Alliance of ex-president Benzer and Jorge Grescalos Nepataya, head of the extreme right. Their men, Siles Suazo charged, were protected by functionaries in the Interior Ministry and generals and colonels in active service. That, of course, is the coup I was referring to earlier, that was performed by the DEA, the American Drug Enforcement Agency, trained Leopardos. Okay, variety of things to talk about here. It gets real complicated. Hang tight, and let me point some things out to you real quickly. Okay, as mentioned earlier, Stefano Della Chia is one of the kingpin fascists in the world right now.